You are listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. We're going to change pace a little bit now, and our next agenda item in the program is to look at what's called lived experience. And we're going to look at the service user perspective. And we've asked John Costa, who's got a rather unique take on what it's like to think about being in prison, because he's served a sentence himself. But John has a career now as a journalist, an educator, and what he calls a documentarian. So I'm just going to pass over to John and give the floor to him.
Thank you, John. This is John saying thank you to John for handing over to John. Yeah, thank you. Hi, everyone. My colleague Rob Watson has informed me there's 45 people watching on YouTube as well. So that's good, as well as the people that are here. And hopefully this is of interest to you. As I said, I'm a journalist now, freelance journalist, and I teach part-time media production at De Montfort University with Victoria Knight, who recommended me for this as well, and obviously with Rob Watson. I spent 3 months in prison 13 years ago. So I often call that sort of two parts of my life, but also pre the internet for most people and smartphone technology and the things that we're talking about now. So probably have quite an interesting view on it. And the talks that I give about that, particularly to students going forward. Now, obviously, I'm here as lived experience because I've sort of seen it from the inside. But I guess the pandemic has done something quite strange for all of us and for the world as well, which has given us all an opportunity to understand what isolation is like, maybe not being able to go out, the logical side of going out for a walk, that sort of stuff. But the one thing that's probably helped all of us during this period of time is we're still able to communicate with people. So my view has always been, and when I got asked to give this talk, was very much around that kind of communication with family members, particularly children, you know, your own children. Victoria gave me four things that she wanted for me to focus on, because she knew I only had 10 minutes and I could talk for 4 hours. So I'll just answer those four points, if you like, and then hopefully I'm willing to expand on any of them when we have the conversation. It says here, in your experience, what was prison like with limited access to communications? It was the isolation from family, children, family connections, that kind of stuff. And what I observed in there, because obviously from my own perspective, I'd never been in trouble before. I think I was 41 at the time. You know, lots of younger people, lots of people in there where it was a sabbatical from their chosen career. Was that it raises anxiety amongst prisoners as well, through to not what's going on at home, through to, you know, worrying about situations, and also that, you know, they were more than capable of carrying on their own business in there as well while they were away. So I think, you know, we need to be considerate of that when it comes to access to digital technology and stuff, about, you know, both the victim but also people carrying on as normal and not changing behaviors maybe. There's lots of tension points as well. I think, you know, phone queues, we tend to focus on phone queues in popular culture now, in Netflix and anything that you'd see about that kind of stuff. Tension points where you can meet other people for things to kick off. So I think anything, for example, if I look back now, the ability to have called from my cell, I think would have been a positive one. And, you know, not having to go out and maybe having people hear in your conversation while you're in the queue. And again, also being able to get to the phone at all. I remember when we first went in, you know, the way that the floor was unlocked meant that you were never in the queue at the beginning, you know, or the shower, so those kind of things. Yeah. So that's, you know, for me, it's very much around communication to first and foremost. Then the next point was, what role should digital services and devices have for prisoners? Well, for me, I think it would have been helpful with things like canteen and the ordering of personal items. And also being able to have some sort of control over that you couldn't be influenced. I remember a prison officer saying to me on the very first day, you know, if you don't smoke, don't start. You're not in the trade. You're not in the currency to be able to be influenced or coerced in any way, shape or form. So there was, for me, it's that kind of ease to be able to do that. Maybe access to money for things that you want, particularly if you're serving a longer sentence. You know, it was on a catalogue. It could be done easier. communications with family. I was very lucky to get a job in the library. They were like, ha-ha, he's a journalist. He can probably read and write. We'll get him in the library. He'll be great for Audrey magazines. Was use of things like storybook dads, you know, the use of sort of, obviously that was very CD-based then. Anything that we were giving people positive experiences where they could use, maybe something they, the last time anyone said anything positive to them was at school about their artwork, they were able to do the artwork for the CD that went back to their child with their own voice. So we were teaching skills to people that for the first time it was about the outside world, you know. Education, because of the shortness of my sentence, it became quite clear talking to some of the longer prisoners that, you know, you couldn't access things unless you were in there for a longer term. So all the jobs were taken. I ended up helping people to read and write that were from foreign countries, and then took part in some education as well. But that was very much based on laptops. So therefore, we had trouble with those that couldn't use that technology because they hadn't engaged in a positive way with school. And of course, then there was the necessary reading and writing if you then made it about pen and paper. So I think anything where people going in now to prison where they could access education or things that would be useful to them based on the technology that they were using now would help them when they were inside rather than regressing back to something that was almost like backward looking, if you want, probably would make the prison sentence even worse. If you've not had a good experience with school, then education in prison, you know, it's a very much, it's a good one or it's a negative one. So I think if you were using things that were going to be meaningful and genuine for employment, next steps, particularly if we're looking for people to stop and to change their lifestyles, I think having something that's not just a time filler that would be very, very positive. Yeah. And I remember, you know, going into the education thing where it was MS Encarta. So, of course, a closed system, you were putting the CDs in to access information. So I think anyone who is looking to better themselves and change, then, you know, it needs to be done on that basis. Just an interesting point. When I came out of prison and started a news agency around the criminal justice system, it was called Inside and Out. And we used to take ex-offenders and give them employment opportunities for their first reference. We actually got the library service to use the system they'd put in place to catch people using the internet, bearing in mind this was 2008, 2009, to actually monitor that person's time slot that they were on there using the internet. So it can be done. Sometimes the system that's used there for catching people can actually be used to monitor people and give them enough rope in order to be able to move forward. Okay. The third one was, do prisoners have a right to access technology in prison? I might be controversial here and say, well, no. You know what I mean? I think, you know, as someone who's been inside, maybe, you know, maybe I didn't have any rights at all. You know, I'd committed an offence and there I was. Everyone in prison's innocent. It's interesting when you stand in queues with people, everyone will tell you that they didn't do that. It was someone else. And so I think, you know, it's an interesting to hear you guys talk about human rights and stuff. But at some point, those rights come with responsibilities. And so, you know, is it punishment? Are you away from family? Is that punishment enough? Should you be able to access all the things that you've got at home, like, you know, digital streaming services and stuff? So now I talked to students for the last 8 years of the 13 years I've been out at Loughborough University. And those students are always going off to be social workers, working child protection, police officers, prison officers. And we often have this conversation. And I said, sometimes I think we need to look at it logically about what the sentence is when it comes to access to this stuff, but also things like in relation to the outside world. If someone now has just served a 13-year prison sentence and goes out, they don't know what a smartphone is. You know, we need to think about how long that technology has been around. But also, if you're about to go in today and that kind of technology isn't there, maybe it's worse because it's going back to something that they've never used before, which might, you know, pen and paper, for example. Yeah. So I think it's positive in being able to use technology, and I think it's really important. But I would say that in anyone that I've spoke to that's involved in the criminal justice system, even to the chief constable locally coming to me and say, John, could you come and talk to some of my officers about what your experience was like? Because you can actually tell it in a way they understand. It's always been about the media response. I think people that are in the criminal justice system, you know, senior managers and stuff, would always be aware of, you know, what's the response in the media. I remember when they were talking about prison radio here, and the Sun was used a headline of something like lazy lags listening to radio all day doing nothing. It's what the messaging is that you're using and what the messages that you're putting through. And then the final point was, what responsibility do prison services have in the administration of digital technology? I think the responsibility is making sure the equipment is relevant, modern, and it actually works for anybody that's leaving prison today, you know, particularly if you're going to get it into talking about employment. And also that it's safe and there's no fear of the continuation of crime from victims, thinking of people going inside, being able to maybe, you know, perpetuate intimidation through the fact that they've got open access. You know, it's the fact that, you know, we're able to monitor everything that we do now amongst ourselves on the outside world. Why can't we monitor that inside and maybe link it to things like, you know, privileges, access, as everything else is. So for me, I think it's definitely communication, being able to communicate with the outside world. And to close the loop on where I started, if you look at the pandemic now, like I said, you've all experienced the period of isolation and sort of, you know, not being able to do what you necessarily want. But the one thing that's helped us is being able to communicate with people, you know, use technology like this to carry on functioning. I think it's the logic of putting that into that kind of environment is the thing that's going to be the most positive one to focus on. Thank you.
John, thanks very much indeed. We've got quite a lot of comments coming in. So let's go straight to some of the outside comments. Someone called Franz Lemmers has made two comments relating to how important e-learning and education is for people inside prisons. And let's see if we... John, I can put you straight into that education aspect of digitization and whether you've got any comments that you'd like to raise about that. France is saying what needs to be done so that inmates can follow study courses that they want to, perhaps choosing their own perspectives. Can you pick up that point?
Absolutely. The first example I'll give you was engaging in level one and two English. Even if you were able to pass that, but you couldn't pass it because it was being done on a laptop and not with pen and paper, that you then couldn't access creative writing, which would have really helped you because that was level three. Mm-hmm. And you had to do one and two for the funding. And I remember having some, you know, very kind of mature, level-headed conversations. Hopefully it comes across I'm a mature and level-headed person. I can have a conversation even if I'm a prisoner and you're a prison officer or someone working in education about the logic of stuff. And they shared the frustration that a lot of people, they couldn't help through creative writing. They couldn't because of level one and two having to be the benchmark for you to do to get there. Okay. So for me, I think education is key because invariably, you know, someone like myself, you know, I'd like to think I was an anomaly in there and all of the experiences I had and conversations and even still being able to communicate with a lady that run the library 13 years later meant that I came with that kind of, way of being able to represent people. But if you come into prison with a poor experience of education or little experience of education, and you treat the prison system as an extension of the criminal justice system, like you would talk to the police or anything like that, prison officers, then your experience is going to be that self-perpetuating thing where you're never going to spin out of it. And of course, you get employment inside, which you then use for your canteen, but that's not getting you to look at what comes next. And I think that's where education is key, being able to access things that people are interested in, because if they're interested in it, then obviously they're going to be able to focus, motivate and achieve that. Now, if we look at it from the perspective of maybe now in the pandemic where people are home educating, you know, you're struggling getting your child to do classes like they did at school. But if you were to set up a project now and set out to do a project that brought into account, you know, history, geography, maths, English and all that sort of stuff, they'll be writing and doing math calculations by making a newspaper more than they would if you did maths, English and all that sort of stuff. So I think there really needs to be a logical view of this as well that also aids, you know, prisoner calmness, you know, compliance. Things are a lot calmer. You know, it, dare I say a happy prison. I didn't mean it in such that term, but certainly helping prisoners to think about what comes next and that responsibility and the impact on family and stuff, you know, sort of desisting in that behavior. And, you know, rehabilitation sometimes comes from within as much as it does about being punished and stuff. So hopefully that's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, no, good. And I've got one more comment from the YouTube audience, and I want to start with you, John, and then we'll broaden it to the panel. Do any of the panel know of any initiatives focusing on communication with families' needs of prisoners imprisoned away from their home countries? But let's ask your lived experience. You spoke about how cut off and isolated you felt. Can we start with you, John,
sure,
about whether, you know, the digital agenda could help you with that? And then maybe let's ask the wider panel about contacts with people who are in prison away from their own country. Let's start with you, John, and then we'll broaden the question.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the ex-wife, she was the wife at the time, said, like, you know, I'm not bringing the kids to see you. So for the whole time I was in there, I only saw my parents a few times, and some other mates came to visit. So I think, you know, it was my kids only, I only engaged with them through stuff they sent me, or I sent them when they went to my parents. Okay. So there was no communication at all. I think if there'd been the ability to, beyond use of in free time, queuing up for the phone, I probably could have done a face-to-face video call with them at least once when they'd been at my parents, and that would have been quite helpful for me and them. I mean, they were 7 and 8 at the time. That would have been quite helpful for them. And I think also the only experience I've got of talking to people is, I remember this lady came to me once and said, I'd seen a talk you did on YouTube about being in prison. She said, and I wonder if you can help me. So my children get really upset at mealtime thinking about their dads eating in prison at the same time as them. And I said to her, well, when do you have dinner? She said, about 5:30. I said, well, he's eaten an hour earlier. Dinner in prison was at 4:30. And she said, really? I said, yeah. So you can just say to your kids, well, you know, dad's off doing something. He's in the exercise yard, or he's in the library, or he's in the gym, you know. And she said that completely changed the dynamic for her of tea time with her children, because they didn't feel like this man was sitting in a parallel universe exactly the same time as them. And I think because popular culture is what feeds our relationship or understanding of prison, from, you know, Essex Boys through to Danny Dyer, through to everything that's on Netflix, that kind of state penitentiary example, somewhere in between there, I always say there was this metronome between, you know, The Shawshank Redemption and Porridge. And for you that don't know what Porridge is, was a comedy that we had that used to be set in prisons here. You know, hours of calm and with moments of madness. I think we don't understand what prison life is like. Everything that most people know, beyond maybe people on this call or on YouTube, know about prison, they get from popular culture. And obviously that just, you know, magnifies the bits that are much more interesting or violent or, you know, more humorous.
Okay. Let's just broaden it then. Can we look to other people on the panel to look at the question of communication with families? And are there examples about reaching out to families if they're relative is in a prison in another country? Are there good examples of being able to have digital contacts? Anybody able to pick that up? I'm looking around.
Can I just respond to that?
Thank you, Steve.
Communication, let me first start with voice communication. I think telephony, a lot of the majority of the countries allow communication by voice, but often it's very expensive. That's already a problem. A second problem I also see is that the time zones and things like that is not taken into account. And it fits in what we just heard is also about what John says, is the link to the outside. And the moment when you're allowed to call is not always the best moment for calling a family who is busy with feeding the kids, for example. So a good example is what I think that the current project that has almost completely rolled out in Belgium is a telephony on the cell, and giving people the much more room and time-wise to call when they are suitable, and when it fits also the other person for calling. It's a project that's also currently rolling out in France. But of course, video is even an added value, very important related to that. And I think, and maybe it can be one of the single collateral positive things related to COVID, is that all the countries where they have introduced video conferencing technology, see that suddenly also those people who would never have a visit because their family and relatives live the other side of the world now have the possibility to do that. Although I hear that a lot of logistic and passport and identity controls is blocking it often, But I think video conferencing and video visit technology is very powerful to support that.
And also cheap. So,
can I interject? We talked about money, the dirty word money. Can I just come in? Is that all right, John?
Go for it, Victoria.
Yeah. Yeah, this sort of phraseology around video conferencing and video visits, which I know it's used quite heavily, that term in the US. And I was rightly corrected on Twitter, I think rightly corrected, that they're not visits, they're calls. And there's been quite a lengthy debate and some tension around the use of video calls, certainly in the US, where, you know, families are charged $25 a hit, and, you know, the call quality and they're relatively short. And so there are some tensions around who's willing to pay for digital engagement, be it video calls. And so there are some tensions around the costing of services for prisoners, which I don't think we've touched upon today. But in terms of, you know, exploiting, you know, often poor families, you know, $25 is a lot cheaper than, you know, taking a day off work, traveling for, you know, if we think about the geography of America and traveling to the nearest prison that their family might be in, you know, that $25 is an attractive option, but does that replace the quality of a face-to-face visit? So, you know, there are some tensions around that. There's been some anecdotal evidence that I've heard of, is certainly, you know, how welcomed families have received these video calls, particularly with the onset of the pandemic, and how useful they've been. I've heard, and again, this is anecdotal, that this has been upsetting, you know, children and also prisoners, you know, to see their family environment as well when they've been removed from it. So there's lots of tensions, and it's complex. But I think, you know, the in-cell telephony is a good step in the right direction. And again, there are pockets of this happening across the globe. And again, we need to just observe and watch. You know, this is all unknowns for the prison settings.
Okay, now we are going to need to move on. John Costa, do you just want to have a last word before we move on to the next topic?
Last word, good grief. Yeah, it's a societal thing as well. You know, we've got to take people on a journey of maybe understanding what the criminal justice system is, what the purpose of the criminal justice system is, you know, what restorative justice is, all that kind of stuff, maybe what the options are. You know, I think the example of Drop the Box is a really good thing that we have here in the UK, where they're trying to get employers to drop the box that says I've got a criminal record. Now, I understand that, you know, you might not necessarily want to employ an ex-offender. That's fine. But at the same time, you know, here we've got people that can't get work because of their criminal record that could work. This is the thing. It's not a case of not wanting to work. It's the fact they could work, and therefore, you know, there'd be less strain on the state when that cycle thing is they're a drain on the state because they've got a criminal record. I think, you know, the work that I've done with young women, particularly, that have got criminal records around the fact that, you know, they've stolen the condoms to give to their abuser, or, you know, stealing baby food and all the situations we've got around food banks and stuff, that, you know, people are getting criminal justice records now, are getting records now that, you know, were on their way and destined in a parallel universe to attend university and are now caught up in that cycle. And so I think we look to the criminal justice system for solutions to these things within the wall. Yeah, of course, then when the dirty thing, as Victoria said, money comes into it, there isn't money for doing that. So do you lock people up more often, or do you give them chances to rehabilitate or turn away from it? And then they come out into a world that is still not interested in them, even when they've rehabilitated, unless they're the poster child of they've got their open university degree and therefore they're going to work for a charity. That doesn't happen to the vast majority of people that come out that want to change their lives. It's my final word.
and it shall be noted. Thank you. Now, again, we're going to change direction a little bit, and we're going to take an NGO perspective and invite Jana Kavkova, who works for Rubicon, which is an NGO in the Czech Republic. Her job title is advocacy expert. And Jana, I'm going to ask you to take the next part of the program, please.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jana, as John said, and what I would like to share with you is the perspective and experience of NGO when working with our clients in prisons. And I have gathered some direct experience from my colleague, not only from Rubicon, but I'm also active in an association, like an umbrella of NGOs working in penal affairs. So I rely on the experience from the ground, from my colleagues who provide mainly counseling or some educational services in Czech prisons. And definitely what I have to say, thanks to the COVID pandemic, there has been a huge change in our prisons. Maybe you could almost call it a revolutionary change, because our experience is usually things are changing rather slowly within the prisons because they're pretty rigid institutions. But I have to say that during the COVID pandemic, a lot of things have taken place. And if I think about it, actually, the prisons and the prison service were able to adapt pretty quickly, because I think Czech Republic is not very far in terms of digitization. I think we really lack behind other European countries. And I would say the change that happened in Czech prisons was quite big. So what happened is that part of our work, which we always used to do in person, has moved to the online world. So we provide online counseling or other services to our clients in prisons. And while before the pandemic, it was impossible to have a Skype conversation with a client, with a prisoner, now more than half of the prisons where we are working actually enable Skype conversations with our clients. So there's been a big change in there. And I also have to admit that this has been, it still is, a learning process for all the parties involved, for the NGOs, for the prison service employees, but also for our clients, for the prisoners. We all somehow got too used to this new situation. And I also understood that not our councils were very happy about this move in the beginning, that they have to, you know, stop their direct work with the clients and instead communicate by Skype. So we all had to find our ways how to adapt to the new situation. And still, there's a lot that needs to be figured out. There are definitely many challenges, mainly because situation is very different in particular prisons. So definitely what we would need, but I'm sure it's been worked on, is to have kind of rules and standards and support for all the prisons, that the conditions are getting more similar in all the prisons. But I understand that this is a journey. Definitely, there are a lot of pluses or benefits in the online communication. Number one is definitely efficiency, right? Czech prisons mostly are pretty remote, so to travel to get in touch with your clients takes a lot of time. So it's fine that this is much faster, much easier, and it also enables us to be in touch more often, just to check up on our clients and not to wait till the next visit or exchange letters, which we did before. What we find is also very useful, that sometimes we can also share documents, for example, when we are helping with the debt issues or helping to prepare the people for release. Then we can share some of the documents during our conversation, share the screen. And again, this makes things much faster. But now, then again, some prisons actually allow to share screen when you are having conversation. Other prisons don't allow to share the screen. So again, the standards are very different in different prisons. A practice that we also use is using these online meetings when one counselor working with a client in the prison needs to transfer the client to a new counselor, for example, a person who will be helping this client after release, which was not possible, you know, having them all traveled to certain prison. So now this is possible, these transfer meetings. But there are also a lot of problems and challenges. Definitely, I would say number one is privacy, because no prison actually allows the Skype calls without a presence of somebody from the prison staff. And sometimes there's even other people, other inmates that are actually Skyping in the same room. So there's a lot of lack of privacy. And you cannot discuss any personal matters because the environment is just not safe enough. For us, it's sometimes also difficult even to assess whether the situation is even safe, whether there are who is actually there in the room. You can't see it on Skype, so you talk to your clients, but you don't really know who else is in the room. So this is also quite difficult, quite challenging. There's an interesting point that one of my colleagues actually mentioned, that he was working from home. And he had this conversation with a client in prison, and that actually this was very unpleasant for him, that he had the feeling that he kind of invited the client into his home, and he felt this was unpleasant as well. Of course, you can solve it by using some environment that you set on your computer, but it was an interesting concern about privacy also from our colleagues, from our counselors. Definitely, I would like to stress out that the online communication can never replace the personal contact that we have with our clients. But I do think that it's very wise to use a kind of combination, that you might have personal contact and personal visits, but also keep the online contacts even after the end of the pandemic, that it's something we should keep and develop it even further after the pandemic, hopefully, is over one day. And, you know, when we will actually be able to visit our clients in prisons again. And I'm also happy to say that as NGOs and as the association of the NGOs, recently we've been in quite intense contact with the Czech Prison Service, and we're thinking and discussing how we could develop the online communications further, not only between NGOs and their clients, but maybe also that NGOs might help the family members who don't have access to internet to actually visit their families in prisons. So that's something we're still discussing, which might be a next exciting step. We're just talking about it as a pilot project now. So I don't know if I still have time or if you are going to stop me there, John.
One more minute.
Okay, maybe in one more minute, what I would like to highlight are four considerations, which are not my own. I've read them in a very interesting toolkit on virtual justice put together by Incarceration Nations Network. And the first of them is, let's seize the opportunity to reform. So the pandemic definitely is an opportunity. We should make use of it. The second one, don't overestimate the transformative power of technologies. Technologies still are just a tool. And I definitely think we need to reform the current criminal justice system to make it more restorative. And technology might be a useful tool, but it's just a tool. Third one, don't underestimate the digital divide. I mean, there's huge differences between, you know, the access people have to internet, etc. And fourth one is don't underestimate the costs and also the implementation challenges. So to digitize prisons is a process that will cost some money. It will be a difficult task, but I definitely think it's important and we should take this step and continue in transforming the prisons and making them resembling the outside world also in the digital terms. Thank you.
Fantastic. What great use of a minute that you use. Thank you very much indeed. Our audience has been pretty active, and I'd just like to feed in a couple of points, and then Pedro has his hand raised, so we'll go straight to Pedro after I just feed in these points from outside. Is that okay? Two people want to agree with the issue that you shouldn't monetize aspects of contact with prisoners. Admin charges for fund deposited into inmate accounts or having to pay for video contacts, particularly when, for example, WhatsApp and so many access points to video calls are free. Somebody called Balatito Akinralabu said video calls are cut off if families receive them whilst outside their homes. This is understandably a security precaution, but how do we balance security and rights or prioritise one over the other? I mean, that's a profound point, but again, shows how a video call can have complex implications. There's another point just come in, which says, in your views, what are the three main initiatives that you envision to help capitalize on the momentum COVID has given us for improving prison systems? I noticed that in the presentation we just had from Jana, there are really interesting NGO potential to improve the work between the NGO sector and the prison service, and how the NGOs can help work with families, for example. Well, as we broaden the discussion out from the roundtable, perhaps you could bear that last question in mind as we look to the future. So Pedro had his hand up, so let's see what he would like to contribute.
Yes, very, very, very briefly. It was just, I raised my hand when Vittoria was talking about the situation in the US, and We should distinguish very well the reality in the US and the reality, you know, in Europe and in our own context, both in terms of the pricing and the model and the way it works there. So it's different. It's not comparable at all, even though we have to have concerns. So in the US, video visitation or the video calls have been used very often to replace not to replace only the visitation during COVID times, but really to replace physical visitation, because it's in some cases it's more it works better in the advantage of the prison that visitors don't come in to see their relatives. So, but that's something that we are not, according to our European experience, that we are experiencing here. So yeah. So I just wanted to make that point. What I've been seeing as well is that in many jurisdictions, and as it was just presented in Czech Republic, COVID brought a reflection around the use of technology in prisons that is really, it's very relevant, it's very important.
And we've been seeing countries that would not allow inmates to have more than 5 minutes phone calls or either a day or a week, depending in many cases. Very often I had the resistance that people would say, well, it's in the law, we cannot change it. And very often they didn't even remember why it was 5 minutes and not 10. So it really, the COVID's reality really made people think about why do we do things on this way? And they say, well, yes, we do 5 minutes because actually we didn't have enough phones for everybody to call. So we, in order to avoid conflicts, yeah, we make it 5 minutes. But as Stephen said, in Belgium, in France, in other jurisdictions as well, now countries are moving into in cell phones. So having the phone inside the cell so that the officers don't need to move inmates from one place to the other and they can call from their cell. So if the phone is inside their cell, so why do we restrict them to 5 or 10 minutes? What is the argument there? So what just to go very briefly to say that, yes, I see that COVID brought this huge opportunity to rethink and the way we allow these basic services to be provided. And I don't think it will go back. So I don't think that, and that's the major advantage of this situation, is that we'll continue to have video visitation, we'll continue to have longer calls and more possibilities to call, and we will, and that will not replace the physical visitation, of course, the family visits, but it will be a very important reinforcement to those. Just to say that.
Well, COVID makes us ask the question why, and on that note, we're going to move to the last contribution on our agenda, which I said at the beginning was going to be busy, but busy good, I hope, and we're going to now move to. Roman Safranek. Welcome, Roman. We've saved the best till last, Roman. So a warm welcome to you. Roman is head of IT in the Czech Republic Prison Service, and I'm going to ask you to give a public service perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Roman, and I have prepared a short presentation for you on the topic digitalization and human rights in prison. Year 2020, a year full of painfuls, a very complicated year of the unknowns. This year brought many opportunities and challenges. The first challenges in prison service was restrictions of rights of the prisons. There was the prohibition of the family visit, impossibility to work for prisoners because there in Czech Republic was lockdown, companies, fabric, everything was stopped. There was impossibility of outdoor walks of prisoners because many prisoners was in the quarantine. The prison service of the Czech Republic applied countermeasures and compensation for prisoners. The main compensations were video visit because the contact with the family is very, very important. The video calls was very popular and very successful project. Next project was more calls, more sport activities, more interesting activities, and e-learning on PC, internet, and studies. I assume that these measures have been applied in the prison service around the world, but I must ask, it was enough? I must answer that no, because suicide behavior has been the highest in the last 15 years in prisons. the pandemic situation hit the prisoners very hard. ICT is a tool to eliminate this pandemic situation. The year 2020 brought many opportunities for IT. On the spring of 2020, there was a green light for IT projects, how to improve the prisoners' conditions. And Ask explained that the video calls will prepare before pandemic time, and the pilot or the projects will take 2 years to implement to all 35 prisons in the Czech Republic. But in the spring of 2020, we can deliver and start in 35 prisons in 2 weeks only. Next pilot is a kiosk with self-service. We start this project in these days, and there will be a request from prisoners and I don't know what else, many things, and this digitalization of human rights inside the prisons. About this project, inside we discuss more than 1 year, but on the spring we need only 30 minutes and we made the final decision that we will start and implement this project. There are many next projects with probation and mediation surveys with NGO, non-government organization. And now we start a project Legal Knowledge for Prisoners inside prisons. But all the projects will need to build a new IT infrastructure inside with very strong safety, security. This project will be very, very long, for a long time. I think that years 2020 was very successful. Very complicated, but successful for IT and for prison service with new projects. Board of Prison Service of the Czech Republic changed the mindset that because the IT can help with solve this problem with pandemic situation. And I think that I must say that digitalization with only add-on the humanity and personal contact is very important for prisoners, and IT is only add-ons for this situation. Challenge for the public sector. It's IT staff. I have problem with hire new developers, architects, business analytics. The problem is the salary. Problem is the competitive with private sector. For me, the people is this IT staff is hidden for me. And the money will be very interesting for next year because IT projects need money. It is interesting that the prisoners gain experience with digital self-service, but the reality outside the public sector is different in Czech Republic because paper still alive on our public sector. And it is the crisis will show how good is the information information systems and processes in the public sector. So Now we will cooperate with ministries, non-government organization on the projects. And I hope that year 2021 will be so successful too as previous years with the IT projects. I hope that they will cooperate on the project with this organization. And I would like to send thanks to present service in Slovak, Belgium and England, because in previous year we can visit this country and inspire in this country for our projects. So it's all.
Is that it? Thank you very much.
Very short. So, I have many times.
Right. Well, that was very well communicated and emphasized, and you ended by emphasizing international collaboration, but also the need to collaborate across ministries and with other agencies. So thank you for that. Now, we've got about a quarter of an hour left, and I want to stress that those of you on the live streaming event, please feel free to send in more points. And I'm wanting to turn first to the round table for you to reflect on what Roman has just said. And I want to pick up the challenge, really, about how hard it is to cooperate between agencies, because quite often sharing information is politically and organizationally difficult. And one of our questioners said about how hard it is that people get very precious about their own information. And perhaps you have experience of agencies collaborating. Would anyone like to comment about that, please?
Can I say something on that?
Please, Steve.
Yes, I was happy to have a delegation from Czech Republic, I think 2 years ago or last year in Belgium. And I think with European support and very important support from European international organizations like ICPA, for example, where I'm a board member, I think we try to help this journey of inter-agency collaboration. So I have the impression it's improving. I also have the impression that the digitalization is becoming more on the agenda of those international cooperation, which is a good thing. And I really would like to with all the audience we have, support them and say that please participate, please share and use those international organizations to do that, and then the conference like this to do that. I think it's really powerful. And also what Roman was mentioning in the context of the collaboration, I knew from my experience as CEO in Belgium, what's also very important are two things, is having the collaboration internally within your government, with the courts, with the justice department, with the police, things like that. I acknowledge it's very difficult, but also on that, I think there are possibilities to do that and just take the initiative and talk with those people and it's possible, because digital transformation is happening not on a single island. It's happening in an ecosystem of actors working together, NGOs, teachers, Ministry of Justice, things like that. So we just have to have them all on board. So it's very important to work, and it potentially also helps to get the funding better, and the more people at every level are convinced that it is needed, the more easier it will be to get the funding and the budgets to support.
Mm-hmm. We've had another comment come in from the audience about, again, stressing how many foreign prisoners there are in each jurisdiction and how digital contact for those foreign prisoners is. So I'd just like to emphasize that. Around the round table, would anybody like to indicate and pick up any points that Stephen or Roman have made?
If I may comment.
Please do, Eva.
My name is Eva. I work for the Prisoners Education Trust, and we are a charity. And what we do is that we fund learners in prisons in England and Wales in terms of their distance learning courses. And as you can imagine, at the moment, everything is happening on paper, and it is quite difficult to source distance learning courses in today's climate on paper. So we very much promote digitalization of prisons, because it would be great if we could offer digital courses where they could be done digitally, and also perhaps assessments submitted digitally. But I think that we are quite kind of far away from that. But what I wanted to say is that, as Roman was talking about, actually having the infrastructure of delivering digital in prisons, that's kind of one aspect of it. But the other aspect is to be populating the kind of digital programs with something that is productive, that is useful, that generally prisoners would find kind of fun, rehabilitative, something that would kind of interest them. And it is something that at the moment Prisoners Education Trust is kind of exploring, how we could work collaboratively with some prisons where the digital infrastructure might be there, but now people are seeking perhaps advice from other organizations what to put on those spaces and how to use them productively.
Okay, thanks, Eva. As you were talking, another comment came in about how important it is to use digitization to get materials in other languages. Myself, I use Google Translate a great deal, but that's again perhaps another way that the digitization agenda can help. Can I come back to the round table? Other comments, other people wanting to come in at this stage?
I'm happy to do it.
Stephen, go.
Sorry, I have been involved a lot in educational context and project. And I had the same question from Luxembourg, from France, I think 2 weeks ago from Canada, about content. So it's the platform of delivery, Roman, I think with open source software like Moodle and some basic equipment and old service, you can do a lot to make it available. But the content is very difficult, especially in international. So a project, just exchanging content or just in open standards are there. Education is an open world. There are open standards just to copy content from Romanian to Belgian server to support Romanian prisoners in Belgium. It's not rocket science anymore. I would say it's possible. We have to work on that. Just create a little WhatsApp group with people and just start sharing on Google Docs some SCORM compatible educational content and you are started. Just to say it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be expensive. It's just a matter of finding the right people to communicate and work together.
Yeah. And sorry.
Yes, John. Please do.
Just following on from Stephen's point, and I think, I've been lucky enough to observe this landscape for a few years now, and I've known Stephen for very many years, and this issue of both sharing resources and ideas and content has been, and as Stephen says, it is quite simple, but I think, you know, events like these are sort of promoting, there is a community of us out there that are wanting to welcome, you know, people working in this landscape, and it's about developing this community. And for many years, that community has been really small, hasn't it, Stephen? Is he there?
Yes, it has been very small, but luckily we see it becoming bigger and bigger.
It's getting bigger and bigger, and I think COVID is sort of, you know, shining a light, you know, finally, so certainly within the, you know, and throughout the last 12 months. I don't know about you, Stephen, but every day I get a request to talk to someone or find out a little bit more about something. So we need to grow this community, and we need to grow, you know, an evidence base, including resources. And, you know, I'll put it to the audience out there today, you know, come and join the sort of endeavour, because we need lots of participants to engage in this movement.
Okay, right. We're coming towards the final few minutes. So anybody on the round table hasn't said anything yet, I might be asking you to say something. I've got a couple of outside points here from Vivian Guerin from Ireland. He's saying that new technologies and artificial intelligence is on the Penological Council, that's from the Council of Europe's work plan agenda for the coming 4-year period. So not only is the attention growing, but also the Council of Europe has got it on its 4-year work plan. So that's, I think, an important point to raise. Someone called Yiri Myrtle, one critical point to note about Skype calls, that there's some fear that there's a danger some Czech prisons will keep Skype calls and not allow face-to-face visitation in the future. So, you know, a bit of a warning there. Now, we are coming into the final few minutes because we are going to end on time. Anybody want to add anything? Aidan or Lenka, would you like to make any points before we move on?
I would like to answer to this question. Sorry. Yes, there is a problem with the Skype. We will working on the replace the solution to Nextcloud solution. It's an open source solution, and I hope that the second quarter in 2021 we will replace this software to another.
Okay, thank you, Raman. Aidan, do you have any comments?
Yeah, please. Thanks, everyone. Sorry, I've been quite quiet so far. My name's Aidan. I work for a think tank called Reform, and we've written several reports on the prison system and recently on digital prisons. I know the point's already kind of been made several times, but I would like to reinforce what Stephen and Vic have both said about the need to kind of look outside of the countries we're in for ideas for how to move this agenda forwards. I mean, it's something that Stephen and I spoke about a couple of months ago, about how several countries at the same time are trying to move the same agenda forwards, and they can be doing it in a very siloed way. And I think this is also something from speaking to some civil servants working on this in the UK. It's also something that can happen within departments when you have a moment like this where you're pushing this quite radical agenda forwards much faster than it has been in previous years. On the one hand, there's the potential for kind of momentous change to happen quite quickly, but also in an emergency situation like COVID, you can get people getting quite tunnel visioned and kind of continuing to work within the same silos and thinking, I do need to drive this agenda forward, but that's why I'm just going to narrow in and focus on it. And actually, people get tunnel vision and they don't have these kinds of conversations with a wider group of people. Mm-hmm. I think in the UK, a really clear example of this would be the issue of trying to get prisoners on universal credit and trying to introduce a digital solution for how you can get prisoners with access to digital terminals signing up to universal credit in the UK. The collaboration is quite simple between the MOJ and the DWP, but you talk to civil servants in both and they're not necessarily having those conversations, or they're finding it very difficult to work with each other. And I think the same would be true of having these kind of international conversations about where different people are at and what they're doing and how they can help each other move forwards. So it was really encouraging to hear. I think I remember say that he'd, you know, been speaking to the UK recently and other people, and that's encouraging that those conversations are being had.
Okay. Lenka, do you want to say anything before we finish?
Yeah, thank you very much. I would like to say that it was a very exciting time for me to listen to all these presentations and discussion. And my main feeling is that it is really enough just to do small things and to discuss these small steps, because I'm sure that this digitalization is not just a matter of infrastructure, but it's also the matter of our thinking, and it really is making our job different. So I would like to say that this discussion is also important, and maybe next session might be about this topic. But thank you for organizing it.
Well, we'll come on to what's happening next shortly. Everybody, we are running out of time. Now, I don't know about you, but it's always good that there's still energy in the room, as they say, even if the room is spread out over the internet and so many different countries. I am going to just ask one or two people if they'd like to have a sign-off sentence, and then I'll wrap up. But shall we go to Jana first? Jana, if you'd like to unmute yourself, and if you'd like to just say something by way of conclusion.
Yes, what I would like to say, let's really make the best of this opportunity that the COVID epidemic has actually brought to us and make the best out of it. But at the same time, let's be also aware of the big differences and divisions also in the sense of access to IT technologies when doing it. And I also think that still the IT technology can never replace the personal contact. So,
thank you, Jana. Stephen, do you have a last word?
Yes, and I think it's in the line what Jana just say. I think technology can things, as I already mentioned, make bad things worse, but has a huge opportunity that can make good things better. So we have to think about it. It's a journey. Digital transformation is not about translating existing analog processes into digital ones. It's about rethinking and asking, like Pospito was mentioning with a good example, asking why are we doing this and can we maybe do it better? Now we are just on the moment of reshaping and changing it. So that's my message. Be creative.
Thank you, Stephen. And Victoria?
I'm going to be quite playful and just regurgitate something that I've said several times before. Technology is not neutral. It brings about change. How we respond to that change is down to us. So be ethical.
Well, I will want to wrap up by saying thank you, first of all, to everybody who's done a presentation. Also, thank you to those of you who've been in the round table and for sharing your thoughts and comments. But I also want to thank you out there who's been in the audience for sending in comments and questions. We don't know who you are, but thank you for being there. And also, if you're listening on a podcast or dropping in on a YouTube, hope it's been useful. At INCJ, we are planning a future event which will be in many ways related to this. Our working title is Cyber Working in the Post-COVID Probation World. And we're going to be doing this later in the year, and we've got an American presenter and somebody from Romania lined up. And I guess at a time when lockdown has given millions of people around the world an experience of what it's like to be locked up. We hope that you found this roundtable fascinating and useful. Technology is changing lives, and I think technology is changing prisons too. Thank you very much for being here today. And once again, you can find us at any time on our website or on Twitter. And this is signing off from the International Network Criminal Justice Seminar. Thank you. Stay safe wherever you are. Goodbye. You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.